What makes a joke funny? Why do we sometimes laugh at inappropriate moments? And can a good sense of humor really make us healthier? According to our next guest, understanding humor requires recognizing the massive complexity of the human brain. Scott Weems is a cognitive neuroscientist and the author of the new book, Ha! The Science of When We Laugh and Why. It's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
What brought you to the subject of science of laughter?
I think I've always loved humor. I mean, we all do. We all enjoy comedies and we all laugh. I mean, that's pretty much universal. But it really wasn't, I guess, maybe in the past 10 or 15 years that I thought about it as an academic pursuit. And I think, I mean, that's relatively recently. Sadly, it was after I was in graduate school. And I think part of the reason it took me a little while to get into it is because at first I wasn't sure that it was a full topic of study. In other words, people are kind of afraid to study humor, if only because it's hard enough getting grant money and topics people take seriously. And sadly, you know, humor some people think is frivolous, and so that makes it kind of hard to get the support to study. But I think it's past 10 years or 15 years or so that not only is it recognized as important to understand, it's kind of hard to ignore, but just that we can learn a whole lot more about it and ourselves by understanding it, because it's so linked with intelligence and language and these other very important things.
Professional comedians are famous for saying that the unfunniest thing in the world is comedians discussing what is funny and what makes people laugh. Did you find that in some way of that serious side of laughter and humor?
I did. In fact, there's another great quote. It's by the writer E.B. White. He said, studying humor is like dissecting frogs. The product always dies in the end. and it's a shame, because in some ways that's true. If you really dissect every joke, I think some of the beauty is lost. It's like studying a spider's web in terms of geometry. It's just, you know, there's a certain grace that's lost. But that said, I think humor is a lot like any other art, like painting or sculpture, where, yes, I mean, it's an art, and you can never, you know, study it and bring it down to a formula. But that said, even artists know that there's important issues like form and contour and space and line. And if you understand these, you can appreciate that art better. And I think humor is the same way. I don't think you want to dissect every joke, but understanding it, how it works, immersing yourself in it, it really provides a greater appreciation for humor. And there's a lot of benefits to looking at it more closely.
I think it's fascinating when you look at cognition and humor and cognition, the links between ultimately insight and creativity to what processes humor in our brain.
Yeah, and that's some of my favorite work has looked at that very issue, insight, and which is really basically in some ways another way of talking about intelligence and how it's linked with humor. And just simply watching a comedy, I think one experiment even just showed people Robin Williams stand up and then had them perform insight tasks, problem-solving tasks, even IQ tests, and see how they do after watching the comedy. And people do better on these tests after watching a comedy than they would if they just watched a plain documentary or something that's not very engaging. And I think the reason why is humor's like exercise for the brain. You know, we don't get stronger physically by rest. We get stronger physically by jogging and, you know, working our bodies and exercising. And the same thing works for the mind. If you don't use it, you don't get stronger. And so humor kind of gets the brain going in a very important way.
So the way we label it is this person does or does not have a sense of humor. How accurate is that, that it is a sense?
Yeah, it's kind of, that's tricky. I think everybody has some sense of humor. I mean, in my life, I think I've met only like one person who I never saw laugh. I mean, everybody laughs some. And again, studies have studied this too and seen that, people laugh on the average about 25 times a day, sometimes as much as, you know, 50, but everybody laughs. But the thing is, whether it's a sense of humor, I think that's linked with some other things too. Like, I think there have been studies that have shown that people who have slight edginess in their personalities, but then I mean like showing just slight hints of neuroticism, psychoticism, things like that, these are the people that have the most active sense of humor, the ones that tell the most jokes and, I guess, incorporate it more in their lives. So it helps to have a little bit of edge, I think.
You do reveal interesting things, such as women tend to be more open to humor And yet women tend to laugh less as they get older.
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah, and there are some fascinating gender differences when it comes to humor. One I think is interesting is some scientists actually went out in public and eavesdropped on conversations in coffee shops and subways and found that women laugh almost twice as much as men. And specifically, I'm talking about a woman talking to a woman will be twice as much there'll be twice as much laughter as if two men were talking. So you get a lot of laughter. Now, the thing is, as women get older, I think they laugh less. They've studied that, too. And why, I don't know. It's kind of, it might just be that they're laughers to begin with. It might be hard to maintain that level of laughter throughout a whole lifetime. But that said, I think everybody, at all ages, they still laugh, and everybody still enjoys humor.
So what explains something like, I mean, you have a segment in here where you say that people with a strong sense of humor are also more environmentally conscious. So how does that work?
Yeah, that was a fascinating study. They it was basically almost as simple as that. Tested sense of humor and then tested how much one cares about environment. And those two were linked. So the funnier they were, the more they did care about, you know, saving the environment. There have been other studies like type A personalities like laugh more too. It's kind of hard to explain them all. Although I think at a deeper level, it all comes down to how active are our brains. An active brain is a healthy brain, and an active brain is a humorous brain. So in some ways, this might be telling us, in a kind of a backwards way, that people who are environmentally conscious, they're thinking about things more. And they, you know, the same way that they kind of maybe work harder to dissect a joke, they might work harder to dissect their environment. I mean, it's a little bit of just guessing. I think there always is a bit of guessing in that. But you see that pattern a little bit if you look at brain scans of people as they read jokes, and you see they do have more active brains.
This is all very subjective, isn't it, though? I mean, I think that's what's fascinating about humor. One person will, you mentioned Robin Williams, one group will find him hilariously funny, and another would do anything they can not to have to sit and watch it, you know, much like the old Jerry Lewis joke. So that is a subjective sense.
It is absolutely subjective. And I think that's why, I mean, how long have we had civilization? Thousands of years. And we still don't know what makes a good joke, you know, at least not a formula or any sort of magic ingredient. And I think that's because it is entirely subjective. I mean, what might be very funny to me might be grossly offensive to someone else. And the reason for that is all of our brains work differently. I might be engaged and kind of get into some joke that other people might find just raunchy or rude or who knows what. And other people might not be engaged at all because they're so they're so edgy that they really need, you know, some real cutting edge. Their humor needs to be very stark. So I think that's why that there is no magic formula for humor. When we understand humor, I think we'll really understand ourselves and what is intelligence and thinking in general.
You bring up an interesting point. When we understand humor, do you think we are still just on the cutting edge of understanding it?
Yes, in a way. I think we've made some great progress, and mostly in the past 10 or 15 years. There's been some great studies in, you know, sociology, psychology, linguistics, even computer science. The stuff in computer science right now might be the most cutting edge, trying to teach computers to not just tell jokes but recognize humor. There's still a lot of ways to go, and I think, who knows, 50, 100 years from now, people will still be studying it and understanding it. But who knows, it might get to the point where, I mean, artificial intelligence is one of the cutting edge areas of humor research, and trying to see, can we get a computer to recognize a joke? And there's some people that believe that when a computer recognizes a joke, it will actually be intelligent. So it might be the humor research kind of broadens over coming time. And what we might think of humor research now might not look so familiar 50 years from now, because we'll really be answering much deeper questions about ourselves and what is sentience, I guess.
The nature-nurture question comes up in this as well. You are looking at a human brain and how it deals with humor and laughter and the science of when we laugh and why, but that can be controlled by our environment, of whether we live in this country or in Spain or in Italy or in Great Britain.
It is entirely. There's good news for people who think that they have siblings who aren't funny, because it looks like there's not a whole lot of genetic determinism when it comes to funniness. Studies have looked at sense of humor tests and looked at see how this is comparable for twins and brothers and sisters, and see that there's not that much of a relationship. And I think it's because so much of it is learned. We see, just look at a broader level of whole cultures. In the United States, we value humor quite a bit. It's typically in the top three things we look for in a mate, number one for females. But not so much overseas. In Asia, Russia, it's much lower. And I think because those cultures, they're not raised with a value for humor like we have here. So I think it definitely is culturally driven.
When you tell a story in the book about what happened in Tanzania in 1962, this is one of the weirdest stories I've ever read in my life.
It is, isn't it? It amazed me how little I knew about it when I first read about it. I mean, I first heard about it quite a while ago, but I hadn't heard anything about it. And I think there's still a lot of people that don't know that there was a whole laughing epidemic that struck over 1,000 girls. This is referring to in the early 1960s, a few girls in a country then called Tanganyika, but now called Tanzania. They broke out in laughter, and they couldn't stop. And it spread to hundreds, and then eventually over 1,000 girls in the area. Just basically crippled their school. It had to shut down schools all across the country, and nobody knew why. They tested the water, they tested the food. There was nothing in the environment that was causing it, and eventually they came up with a theory that it probably was some sort of mass hysteria because the girls' brains were overwhelmed. Because it was a big time of social change. They had just switched from European rule to African rule. The schools had just been desegregated a month before. And religions were changing too because they were switching from a tribal religion to a very structured Catholic and Protestant belief system that had just entered the area. So I think the girls didn't know who they were anymore, and so they, like so many of us do when we're overwhelmed and we don't know what to do, they laughed and couldn't stop.
And there is, you point out in the book, a natural high aspect to humor and what the brain is doing when we are laughing.
It is. That's a great way to put it, is a natural high. And that's because, without getting too technical, it really comes down to a chemical in the brain called dopamine. This is a brain, it's kind of the brain's reward chemical. That's because anytime we do something that is pleasurable to us, that we enjoy, we get basically a squirt of dopamine is available to our brain. And it's in the brain not only when we laugh, because when people read jokes or they hear funny jokes, their dopamine centers become activated. But it's also, we also get dopamine when we eat chocolate, when we do other pleasurable things. And interestingly enough, also cocaine is a drug that really just ups dopamine production, or availability, I should say. So in some ways, humor is like chocolate or cocaine, just a lot less, a lot less strong version of it. You get the same chemicals. It's just less addictive, hopefully.
I do have to say, in 14 years on the show, I do believe you are the first guest ever to use the term squirt of dopamine.
Squirt of dopamine.
Yes.
It brings up some images, doesn't it?
It certainly does. The name of the book is Ha, The Science of When We Laugh and Why. It's a fascinating and very entertaining read. It is published by Basic Books. Scott Weems, thank you very much for spending time with us. I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Ha, The Science of When We Laugh and Why. Scott Weems received a PhD in cognitive neuroscience from UCLA and an MFA in creative writing from Lesley University, and again, author of Ha, published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.